Lisa fucking hates it.
I know she does because she can't hear anything. Blah, blah, blah. Bye then.
You've been listening to The Dating Show. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Culture Clash on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of The Culture Clash Show with me, Juggy.
And me, Tanvi.
Yes, we are back and we've got an exciting episode in store for you. Culture Clash is where we take a look at the melting pot of British society and the culture clashes that can arise. I am a British Sikh Punjabi guy, and Tanvi?
I'm a British Indian gal.
So while we've still got some similarities in culture, we've also got some differences. And the whole aim of this show is bringing a diverse group of people together, talk about subjects that we don't really talk about and haven't got there. And, you know, we can go back and forth on. So really interesting. And Tanvi, what are we talking about on this show?
Yeah, so today's show is all about travelling. So people working abroad, living abroad, travelling around the world, like the benefits of travelling, challenges with travelling, just all things travel. And we've got a lot to talk about today.
We have. We are going to be talking to Anton Danieluk. He was on Love Island Series 5 and he's now a fitness coach and obviously still does a bit of TV, so really excited to get into grips of that. He's also lived in Dubai and now he lives in Marbella, so
yeah, he's had a full experience, so it'll be so good to talk to him. And we've also got Tyrone Ash on, who also sells luxury properties in the UK and in Dubai, and obviously the move to Dubai is getting really common, so it'll be really cool to chat to him as well.
Let's get some tips, let's get our notebooks ready.
Yeah.
Going on. But our first segment, as always, is news. We are going to be, each week we pick several stories that are be making the news or the pop culture scene and taking a look at them from our South Asian perspective. So Tanvi, let's take your mind back to your first ladies holiday.
Oh my
right
God,
your
my
girls,
girls
holiday.
Holiday,
because there's a story. Brits abroad, one in four lads and girls group holidays ends in hospital.
Oh my
so
God.
First tell me where you went and did it end in hospital?
Do you know what? My first girls' holiday, outside of obviously like school trips, was after A-levels. You know when you finish your exams and you go on like post-school holiday? I went classic. I went to Zante with one group. And then I actually went to Napa with two. So I had two girls' holidays in one summer.
Love it.
Because I had a couple of different friendship groups. And whilst they didn't end in hospital, I'll be honest, they were still pretty wild. For like, if you think about it, 18-year-olds going wild in a country abroad, like, it's chaos. Let's be honest, it's chaos.
And let's set the scene. So obviously, how many girls were there? Were they all like South Asian? Was it mixed?
Yeah, do you know what? The Zante holiday was about 15 girls. It was quite a lot. And we were all South Asian because that was the friendship group I had from school. So even like getting some of our parents to allow us to go on this holiday, like for some people, that was their first holiday without their parents. For some, knowing that there were like going to be boys there and alcohol and clubbing. Like from a South Asian perspective, for some people whose parents are stricter, they were quite difficult conversations to have. But yeah, all of us were eventually allowed to go out. But also because some people weren't, you know, allowed out during like sixth form and stuff as much, they went like the complete opposite end when we were out there, and all the freedom went a bit crazy. So yeah, I think girls' holidays can be very telling.
Yeah, they can. And look, that was probably the age where social media, I'm guessing, like, wasn't that
popping.
No, it was
like Facebook.
Yeah,
like,
okay. And you don't do stories on Facebook.
You're not going to get in trouble on Facebook.
Stories are exposing.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. Now it's like, I feel like everyone knows, like, you have the potential of ending up on someone's story. It's a bit more scary.
Did you hear of all these horror stories now of Brits abroad? Like, there's, you know, people not getting sun lounges and having fights about that in Benidorm.
Oh my God,
and,
yes,
you know, bouncers kicking off at, you know, lads that are coming out of a club at 3 a.m. and, you know, all these, you know, balconies and like all the kind of misgoings on in that. It's like, it's actually quite dangerous, isn't it?
No, I know. And I feel like Brits abroad, we've got like this kind of negative reputation. Like, people hate us. People literally hate us abroad because, like, I think a lot of the time, and it's not really anyone's fault, but you're on holiday, you're having fun.
You do get a bit excited.
The alcohol's cheap, you know, you haven't got work the next day to worry about. So obviously, sometimes people get a little irresponsible, shall we say, and bad things can happen when there's a lot of Brits and alcohol involved. You know, bad things can sometimes happen.
They can indeed. Like, my first lad's holiday was MAGA.
Right.
Magaluf. It was like literally straight out the in-betweeners. Like, went there. Typical lads holiday. It was brilliant. But the way I pitched it to my parents was, oh, yeah, I'm just going to Marbella.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. And you see that trend. It's like what I told my parents versus what really happened. And it's like, oh, yeah, what I told my parents would be like, oh, yeah, having nice meals, going for walks on the beach, swimming pools. And then it's like what really happened is like clubbing till 6 a.m. every night.
And you get the pictures, right? You get the stage pictures of you, the lads, a couple of sea shots, a couple of dinner shots. This is what I've done.
Yeah.
And then it's actually just.
Yeah, no, wildness. I also think it is such a fun part of life. Like, yeah, to go somewhere to a different country. Like, I feel like it makes you grow up a bit because you have to be responsible for like your things, your money, yourself. Obviously sometimes people end up in hospital.
Yes.
So they're not always responsible, but I do think it's like all part of growing up.
And it's like almost like a rite of passage. Like, you,
yes,
have to do that. And also there's always one sensible one in the group that does,
yeah,
kind of keep everyone, the father or the mother figure, that if someone does get a little bit carried away on the snake bites and the shots.
Yeah, I think there's always someone to keep someone in check. And it can be a different person every night, but I feel like you've got to allocate someone to be like the responsible adult for the night, because otherwise, yeah, things can probably get out of hand.
Sucks for that person, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But also, there's a growing trend of, like, solo travelling. That's,
yes,
something that I've done, but only for a brief period. I've done it for a month in between jobs, and it was just backpacking, amazing experience. You've done it for a longer period, haven't you?
Yes, I did 3 months, kind of like a mini gap year before, right, I started my grad scheme, around Southeast Asia, and it was amazing, like Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. And it's so common to kind of solo travel there. I think it's different for guys and girls, because when you're a solo traveler as a woman, you have so many other elements to think about, like
did
safety.
You get that, yeah, did you get that kind of pressure from parents, or that kind of not the green light, basically?
Yeah, I think especially as an Indian woman, it's not really that common to go solo traveling.
Yeah.
I think it's getting more common, but I think it's, you know, it's not that normal to be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to pack a bag and go traveling somewhere on the other side of the world where you're not going to maybe have contact with me every day or know where I am. Like, I think that conversation as an Indian woman is a lot harder. But luckily my parents kind of, we've traveled from a really young age, so
yeah,
they know I'm sensible enough and would contact them when I can, but it's hard.
But you also can see why, though, because you do get these, like, these Netflix documentaries about,
oh God,
what happens abroad, and like it does happen, and it is, you know, much as it's sad to say, it does happen to, you know, female safety is a big topic now, and
it
that
is
abroad, and so do you get why it's kind of warranted as well?
Completely understand, but then my view on it is like, you know, everywhere in the world can be dangerous if you're not vigilant and you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I think it's so worth the experience. You just have to be sensible when you're there,
yeah,
and like stay in touch, share your location, meet friends, like other females who you can travel with. Like, there's so many ways to make solo traveling as a woman safe, but you have to be more vigilant,
yeah,
than if you were just like at home.
Joining tour groups as well, that's always a good option.
Yes,
that's
I did that,
yeah,
for one of the months, and it was nice because you make loads of friends from,
yeah,
all over the world as well. But yeah, you kind of have that added level of comfort and safety, and they also arrange like transport and things like that. So it's a good way to do it if you want to do it.
And if you could kind of, obviously we're going to be talking about living abroad this whole kind of episode, if the ideal place to kind of live abroad, you know, there's loads of stories about people emigrating to Dubai. My cousin's been there for 7 years, she loves it, she said she wouldn't come back to Britain.
Really?
So yeah, so what would be your ideal place if you could live abroad?
I would live in
Bali.
Yeah,
okay.
So I actually just went traveling to Bali for 6 weeks,
right,
and it's really common actually for like influencers to move to Bali, digital nomads. I think the way of living and the standard of life there is amazing. Like, when I tell you, my skin was glowing,
really?
I was eating healthy, like I was just living my best life, and I feel like I would really love to live in Bali, like in the future. But yeah, Dubai would also be up there.
But is it a good climate, like Bali? Like, can you know, a lot of people move to Dubai because of the tax purposes,
yeah,
and the wealth element, and obviously the sun. But like Bali doesn't scream that, does it?
I mean, I think it's changing. I think,
okay,
Bali's really welcoming digital nomads. So I also think, yeah, from a financial perspective, there are definitely,
right,
benefits, and also everything there is so cheap, like. Everything you wouldn't pay more than like £10 for a good meal.
Yeah.
So compared,
oh, that's
to living
amazing,
in London,
I'm told.
Like, yeah, honestly, I feel like Bali's one. That's why so many people move there.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely would love that.
Well, for me, it'd be like I went to Canada for some work.
Canada's
and
amazing.
It just is so welcoming.
Yeah.
And everything's so like, and I like the fact that the English speaking as well, because that does like kind of help. You know, I've been traveling abroad in Singapore, and the language barrier was hard.
Yeah.
You know, if I kind of went as a solo traveler. So when I went to Canada, it was just really open, and they love a British accent.
Do they?
Yeah,
get yourself,
you know,
a Canadian,
like,
girl.
There you go. That's the aim, right? That's
no,
the
do
aim.
You know what? Actually, when I was in New York, I would literally speak like, so please may I have a vodka lemonade? Just so they like, they just give, oh, you're from England?
Yeah, they, but so honestly, you've got to milk it, right?
Yeah.
But I think obviously America would be the dream as well for a lot of people, but it's just hard to actually get an opportunity over there because visas.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit trickier in some countries. So I think, yeah, but there are loads of countries all around the world that are like welcoming like people. They want people to move there, work there. Costa Rica's one of them, another really cool place. So,
also, job-wise as well, like, you know, Australia's calling out for doctors apparently from like...
Really?
From like my cousin's kind of got offered, he's a doctor here, GP. He got offered an opportunity there, but obviously it's just that distance, 24 hours, you know?
I think it also comes down to like what your job is. So if you're someone who is like a digital nomad, self-employed, you're so much more flexible. But also how close you are to your friends and family and your home core. Because for me, as much as I'd love to live abroad, I think one of my biggest struggles would be being away from my friends and family. So that's probably why I haven't taken that leap.
Exactly. Same, very much the same. So Tanvi, tell us about the next segment.
So let's do Versus. Versus is my favourite part of the show. And every week we pick a question that relates to the topic, which for this episode is travelling. And we will offer our opinions on the topic and then speak to an expert about their views on the question. So because we're talking about traveling, working abroad, living abroad, today's question is, which is better, the UK or Dubai? And to help us answer that, we have a very special guest. We've got Tyrone Ash, who is the owner of International Real Estate, and he sells luxury properties in the UK and Dubai. So I'm so excited to chat to you. Thanks for coming on
Welcome.
The show.
Welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Very excited.
How are you today?
Really good, really good. It's been a hell of a busy day today. So I've not been short of meetings, work and stress, but it's another day in the life, so that's what we're here to do, right?
I like the cap. The cap is endorsing Tyrone Ash for anyone that can see Tyrone Ash Real Estate. I like it.
It saves me introducing myself every time I meet someone.
Well, I mean, on that note, do you want to just give us a little intro and just tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. So, my name's Tyrone Ash, obviously. So I own an international real estate company, Tyrone Ash International. Took me a long time to come up with a name. So we have probably nearly 200 staff that work in the business across the UK and Dubai now. We are only about 3 months old in Dubai, but we've probably done around 10, 12 million pound of sales with a lot tying up this month. So we've had an exceptional start considering it's a new market, uncharted for us. But we take a lot of pride in kind of delivering a really good quality service in real estate across kind of all levels, certainly in the luxury end of the market as well. And here we are. Yeah. So that's kind of a brief introduction. We also had a television show in the UK called Mega Mansion Hunters. That was on Channel 4. So if anyone watched that, I think it might be floating around on all four still. It's been an amazing. So we're only 3.5 years old as a business, but we've grown a very aggressive rate. And I think we're probably best known for that in the industry, is just some of the amazing things we've done in such a short period of time. And it's a great place to be. I love the business. I love real estate. And I think I'll be a perfect person to answer some of these questions.
But you guys started in the UK, right? So that was your kind of base. And then what made the decision to kind of go branch out abroad, especially Dubai?
Yeah, it was actually something that I stumbled upon more than looked and seeked. I was holidaying with my girlfriend probably about 4 times a year in Dubai. I know it's a hard life. Basically, as I was landing there and I was staying in the hotels and enjoying the kind of amazing things that Dubai has to offer, I couldn't help but the real estate market rammed down my throat. And for what was going on, I thought, God, we've done an amazing business journey in the UK, which is exceptionally difficult in comparison to the processes with the red tape, with the rigid old school businesses and money and all that sort of stuff, to really kind of break into that industry. And then I thought, and I looked into some of the real estate companies and how fast they'd grown. And probably if I look at them, if I'm being brutally honest, which I always am.
No, that's what we like.
Do I think that ability-wise they're as good as our business? Absolutely not. I don't. I think that we have developed in an extremely difficult market. So I thought, Christ, if I take these skills out into Dubai, get to grips with the market, I think we will do exactly the same, if not more, in Dubai. And I disappeared down this rabbit hole of sorting it all out. Took me about 6 months of complete stress because I had to put senior people in charge of the UK while I get my feet on the ground in Dubai. Here we are. We've got a team of about 20, 25 agents now that are doing some amazing things. And we're growing aggressively here now. So it's it wasn't something I looked out for, but it was something that I couldn't ignore. And it got to the point where it was kind of keeping me up at night, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can relate. I mean, do you feel like there is a shift or a trend of people in the UK moving to Dubai? And are they like a specific type of person? Like, do they have things in common? Like, what kind of people are making that move?
You know what? It's a brilliant question. One of the staggering statistics that hit me was that first of all, the Dubai is the number one real estate economy in the world. So there are more transactions happening in Dubai than anywhere else in the world. So just get that on the table straight away. That's a massive statistic. The second ultra massive statistic was the number one buyer in the entire world is from the United Kingdom. So we have done more property transactions than any other nation in the entire world in the number one market in the world. So suddenly I was thinking, right, so there was two things that come to mind. The first is generally the real estate market in itself. People are extremely attracted to it. Now, why are they attracted to it? Well, there are some glaring things that make Dubai attractive. Of course, the weather is one of them. I went back to the UK, and I love the UK, by the way. My family's there, and I go back as much as possible. But the one thing that did get under my skin was the constant rain.
Yeah.
I went to a family christening, and bless my cousin, put on this amazing event. And of course, you know, it got rained on. But, you know, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
So the second thing is the safety. People can walk around with a £100,000 watch on and not worry about it being taken off them at knife point. I know that's not for the whole of the UK, but there are certain pockets that people are very fearful of this. So they have to hide their wealth, hide their belongings, hide the cars they drive in, all that sort of stuff. That's not really, you know, that is a bit of an issue for the wealthy. And then I think it's also about kind of the, you know, and again, this is probably another debate, but I think a lot of people that I've spoken to, when you look at the kind of the laws of the land, you know, these are big things that people are moving here for. Maybe people don't want to talk about it as much, but there are a lot of, I wouldn't want to go too deep onto the subject, but there are a lot of sort of political directions that they are taking schools in and they're taking certain things in.
Right.
These, you know, a lot of parents just don't want to put their kids in these environments. And Dubai, the Middle East, all of this, it just is not entertaining any of it, and it never will entertain any of it. So for more traditional direct views of how to bring up a family, how to do all those types of things, the Middle East is very, very accommodating. And I think there's a combination. And of course, the last thing is how much money people are making in the real estate market. There is a huge appetite for buying and selling here. It's not like it's a bubble. You've got entire world economies coming over. You've got the entire Russian economy, African, India, Pakistan, America, Canada. God, they're all here. The UK, obviously, you know, they're all here. The Italians last year, imagine Italians, Italy's quite a small country. They were the third highest purchaser in the Dubai market.
So Dubai is quite multicultural then. All the expats that have gone there, it's actually quite multicultural. It's not just kind of one specific ethnicity or kind of group. It's quite...
And yeah, like from an affordability perspective, obviously you specialise in the luxury real estate market. But I mean, the prices in London at the moment are crazy. I'm in my mid-20s and I'm struggling to even look at places that aren't like a council estate that I can afford. Yeah. So is it kind of, is there a benefit in terms of affordability as well? Not
massively,
just the luxury part.
Massively.
But...
So there's a few ways that people can benefit. Certainly one of the things that we've found is that we're doing a lot of business, and I'm not ashamed to say it, that's not in the luxury end of the market. So we've got families that are coming over here and they are reserving properties or buying properties that are effectively around, let's say, £300,000 is a bit of a round number. You can get a three-stroke, four-bedroom villa. Some of them are coming in private little roads, and they have got amazing schooling. They've got safe parks for people to play in, amazing facilities as a community, and they're a stone's throw from Dubai and all of the amazing things that Dubai has to offer. They're on estates with championship golf courses. Like, £300,000 in a lot of parts of the UK doesn't get you much at all.
Yeah,
if anything.
So when you think about the quality of life people are getting, they are literally upping sticks, selling up and moving their families over here. And that's what's happening now on a regular basis.
Yeah, but yeah. Do you also think, though, it's quite glamorized, the rise of influencers and everyone else and social media usage in Dubai, it's quite glamorized. When people did come to UK for the same reason all them years ago, when our parents come, Tanvi, and kind of set up home here, and you know, they wanted to make stability for their career. Do you feel like is it actually what it seems in Dubai, like all the glamorization, or is there just kind of like a certain trend where they show the good parts and kind of, you know, because it does make people feel like...
I think it's a very good question, because when you land, of course what you'll have is the attractions. So you'll have Dubai Mall, you have the Burj Khalifa, the Burj Al Arab, you can go down different parts of different restaurants where, listen, if you want to spend £100,000 in a night, Dubai can find the place for you to do it, no problem.
Sure.
But it's like there are amazing things to do. Like, you know, even, do you know what you'll notice in Dubai? And this is one of the things that I have to say has really got me about it, is it's the attention to detail. So it might be just that you go to like a bowling alley or an arcade or some kind of chilled thing that you do, and it's just the detail, it's the service, it's the quality of the food, it's how quickly they serve you drinks, it's how attentive the staff are. Everything is done, you know. I mean, I had an argument with a waiter in a Mayfair restaurant because I waved my arm to flag him down because he kept ignoring me to get me a drink, come back and had a go at me and said, "Don't wave your arm at me."
No.
And I thought, God, I thought you worked here. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not saying all British restaurants are like that. What I'm saying is, They really do make sure that when people come to Dubai, everyone is given the best service. Now, of course, you're going to find holes in some of it, but for me, it's about the overall experience. Now, of course, you know, with anyone, you'll want to go and do the things that are the big attractions, and there's going to be more and more big attractions that they keep doing. But the nice thing is whether it's you want to take your kids to the best zoo in the world, or you want to go to a water park, or you want to go for a walk around the shops, or, you know, if you want to go to a beach club, the best restaurant, a nice restaurant, a chilled restaurant, an authentic restaurant. It's just got everything. And it's like that, it literally.
Selling the dream.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Ready. Yeah. I'm going to get my bags packed.
I know. That's not the intention.
Go ahead. So, like, if say someone's, you know, set on the idea of Dubai, you've explained like all the benefits, like it quite literally sounds like the dream. Like, where would someone start if they were looking to move, start a career there, work there, live there? Like, what advice would you give?
I think there's some glaring benefits with regards to someone who, let's just say, for example, someone who, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but like, let's say like a middle-class working person, someone who's on like, and I'm only using it as a category, so not as a label. Let's just say a middle-class working person, someone who's on like 40, 50, 60,000 pound a year, something like that, right? The issue is that in the UK, you've got pretty heavy tax laws. So if you're getting that on a PAYE salary, you know that let's just work on, I don't know, £4,500 a month. You know, you're only going to really see £3,500 of it, something like that, after tax. Okay. So that's going to come out and leave you about £3,500. If you're employed in the UAE or in Dubai, you get five grand lands in your bank. And that means that you can then save some more money. You can do nicer things. You can go to nicer places. All these types of things come into play. So what you've got to think about is, if you have got a skill or a job or a career in that kind of remit, would you rather have $5,000 a month or would you rather have $3,000 a month? It's a pretty straight story. So if that's the case, then it's worth looking into. And because, if you know, whether that's in the software industry, tech industry, sports industry, real estate, whatever it might be, the industries are all here. So Google have opened, there's all these different, you know, huge companies that are here. You're
it's
not
really progressive, isn't it?
Sacrificing anything by going, basically. If anything, you're looking to gain a lot. How to go about it all depends what industry you're in or what you want to do as a career. It's also whether you've got any dependents. So you've got to be thinking about schooling. So if you've got kids, look at schooling, look at what the great thing is. The schooling is very, very good. But I think the majority are private schools, so they're expecting you to pay. But, you know, it's, you know, for me, public schooling, it's a very, very different debate. I think the UK public schooling system leaves a lot to be desired. Mm. And, you know, for me, I think if you've got that extra income because you're not getting taxed, why not spend it on sending your kids to the best possible school? So, you know, these are all debates that you could have. But
and is it
easy? Look at where you want to work, what you want to work in, what you can earn. Have a look at some of the job roles available. How feasible is it for you to take that job up sticks? And speak to, if you're looking for something to plan in like 6 months, a year, then you could even look at something like an off-plan investment as well. There's some amazing money to be made in off-plan investments because the blocks are selling out in weeks. I think these developers are releasing a new block every single month. So there's so many options for what
I wish I had a pen to write down all these notes. Like it's good advice. But like, so what's next for you? What kind of territories can you see your kind of agency expanding into, your real estate business?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to, obviously, Dubai is a big task. So then we're going to be expanding across all major areas of Dubai. That's going to then go, you know, right up into kind of further areas in the UAE. I think eventually we will land in Saudi and everything in between. And then we are going to be looking at more European destinations. I've got Marbella on the cards. And then I think potentially the south of France. And then I'll be looking at some sort of an expansion by the end of next year towards different American locations, maybe like LA, Miami, New York, those types of places. But these are all kind of pie in the sky at the moment. Dubai is a mountain and it's got to be climbed. It's got to be climbed properly. And when it's done properly, I'd say in about 3, 4, 5 months, I'm always quite ambitious. I reckon it'll be pretty self-sufficient and growing. We'll get that up to 150 agents plus. And then get some senior people who are earning really big money running the teams. And then from there, I'll be able to look at the next expansion.
Well, look, we're excited to see it all happen. You might be getting some job applications from us once you hit like certain territories. But no, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and all about your business. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I really appreciate you having me on. And I wish you all the best with the rest of the show.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye.
Take care.
So Tanvi, after that, what are we saying for the verses? Oh, are you saying Dubai or UK?
I feel like he's sold the dream.
Yeah.
I'm going to Dubai in January, actually, and I might just not come back.
Okay, I'm gonna be the opposite then. I'm gonna say stay in the UK.
Okay.
Just visit
Dubai.
Well,
at least
Dubai.
I think, yeah, you can come and visit
there
me out
go.
There. So
there you go. We'll do the show from out there. Yeah. But like, we're gonna move on to our next segment. So obviously, all the show is about culture clash. Me and Tanvi are from similar but different cultures, and we invite guests on from different backgrounds to take a deeper look at the subject. And today, obviously, it's living abroad. So I'm really excited about our guest that's coming on because we know him from Love Island season 5, but he's kind of, his career has gone on a really nice journey since then. So I'm excited about finding out more and just finding out more about him and dissecting that. So on the line we have Anton, how you doing?
Hi guys, I'm fairly well. How are you?
Yeah,
we're
all
good.
Thanks. All good.
Excited to have you on the show. So thanks for coming.
And you're live from Marbella, right, at the moment?
Yes, Marbella at the minute.
So
yes.
Jealous.
No, you've got nice weather, Anton. We've had a horrible couple of weeks.
Yeah, I know. It's been awful.
Listen, guys, I lived in Scotland for, I think, 20-odd years of my life, so I think I'm due this little bit of sun, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it... Doesn't it rain in Scotland every day, apart from, like, 4 days of the year or something ridiculous?
Literally. I think our summer was a Wednesday this year.
Do you know what? I think you've answered the question of why you... Well, we'll get onto that later, but why you moved. But look, Anton, can you just tell us a little bit about your journey in the last couple of years and where you're at now and kind of, you know, fitness coach, as well as a TV personality, but you've got a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah, of course, obviously, after Love Island, there was a lot of just craziness going on in the world. You know, you had your PA tour, you had brand deals, you had everything going on. But for me personally, fitness was always what I was into. You know, I've done it since I was 15 years old. I was overweight myself personally as a child. And my dream and ambition was always to help as many people as possible live a healthier, happier lifestyle. So after Love Island, that was never, ever going to change. So basically, I went into doing all sorts of different things, but I know you guys want to mainly talk about working abroad, living abroad, so I can kind of delve into how that all happened. So back in December 2020, I believe, I got a message from basically a promoter in Dubai to come on over. He offered me a free holiday to Dubai to stay in a hotel and just do some stories and posts. So, I mean, you would be mad to turn that down. So this was what happened. I went over, stayed in Dubai for literally, I think it was at the time, 7 days, and I never ever came back.
And, wow.
Yeah. So the reason behind that was this guy, he owned a company which basically brought people over on holidays and set up their holiday for them. And me and him became very, very good friends. So his background was very much DJing. Right. And my background was fitness. And at the time, COVID had obviously happened, so it very much affected, well, every business, but especially the entertainment business, and as well, of course, the fitness business with regards to, you know, like gathering in groups to do fitness and gyms, etc. So we kind of just got this crazy idea one day. If I'm honest, I think we were drunk at the time. But The best ideas come when you're drunk. And we were just like, well, what if we could just create this, you know, nightclub gym? And that's what we ended up doing.
Oh,
we just
literally
ended up becoming very good friends, and we just put together this nightclub.
How does that work? Like, so can you describe the experience? We're there at the door. Like, what happens?
Is it a daytime thing? Is it a genuine nighttime thing? Like, how does it work?
No. It literally is just like all hours of the day where you can come in and you can just get away from your life and just be into a party mode. So, I mean, you, even when you start your journey, you sit down in your spin bike and the screen comes on and it's like, class is now commencing, and it's like all the different genres of music start flicking through, the lights start flickering, and you know, the instructor really gets you up for exercising, and it just created making fitness as fun as possible for people.
And you can be in bed by 9, right? And you can be in bed by...
Yeah, exactly. And no hangovers as well, so yeah. It's perfect, you know?
And like, what, do you get off the treadmill and then there's like a DJ in a bar, or is it like not...
Yeah, so it's effectively, it was all class spaces. So it was like spin classes, boot camps, that style of thing. We would have a DJ playing at certain classes, more towards night times. And after the class, we would invite everyone up for like a shot, you know, a shot of protein.
Oh, protein.
Oh, wow, I like it.
No, that's such a good idea, because I feel like, obviously, health is so important. And I always feel like whenever I go clubbing, I drink alcohol, I wake up the next day,
anxiety.
And I'm like, oh, I just regret it. Like, I feel like it impacts my health so much. So yeah, if I had somewhere that was like social, still hit all the spots of like meeting people, going out at night, but like it was beneficial to my health, it's a no-brainer.
Anton, that idea absolutely. Though, would you bring that to the UK? Because it seemed like it worked in Dubai. Would it? Do you think something like that?
Absolutely. I think the thing is with fitness is it can work anywhere if you do it right. And like you said, it's trying to make it as fun as possible for people. Most people don't enjoy exercise. Let's face it. Most people don't. I'm one of the crazy few that do. And my thing was, like I said, always trying to help as many people as possible live this healthier lifestyle. And I just thought, well, if we can do it in a way that makes it fun, take their mind off exercise and create a community and make them enjoy the experience. And that's exactly what happened. So I think it could absolutely work in the UK.
And did you have to, obviously, when you set up in Dubai, did you have to pass down opportunities in the UK, or was it kind of like, you know, everything is remote now, could you do both, or was that a kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very challenging time because COVID was a big, massive thing. And in the UK, the restrictions were still very strict. Whereas in Dubai, it had been lifted a lot because they had had a very strict lockdown. Like, people weren't allowed to actually leave their house except from 1 hour a day. If you got caught leaving your house, you would actually be put in prison. So it was really strict. And that's why I think in Dubai, they got away with being able to open up earlier on than other countries. So at that time, to be honest, there wasn't a lot going on in the UK. So this was the perfect opportunity to focus on this business.
Okay. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, you've spoken about healthy lifestyle so much. You obviously moved to Dubai and now you live in Marbella. And like, what would you say are the benefits in terms of overall health, standard of living and your lifestyle of choosing to live in a different country versus the UK, for example?
Well, the prime example is how do we feel in the winter in the UK opposed to how do we feel in the summer in the UK? You know, the dark nights, the cold weather. It does definitely affect your mood. There's no two ways about it. And just, you know, being able to wake up in a sunny country every single day just is massive on your mental health. You know, just simple as you need to go to the pool every other day, you know, so you want to stay in shape. It's like everyone wants to get in shape for the summer holiday, but it's always your summer holiday. So it encourages you to stay in shape. When the weather's hotter as well, it seems to just be a lot easier to eat healthier. I mean, who really wants to eat rubbish when they're in the sun? Most people like to have salad.
A roast in the sun would not go down well.
A salad. And I just feel like people are happier. Like, you know, they say is sad, isn't it? Seasonal affective disorder.
Oh, okay.
And it's literally proven that there's a relationship between the weather and people's like mood and depression.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's so true. Have you found it easy to kind of relocate so many times, like making friends, like the network side of it? Because I think I get scared to move abroad because I'm so close with my family and friends here that I would feel lonely.
Yes.
So I don't know. How's that been?
What people will probably find strange about me or they wouldn't expect from me because I'm very much a social butterfly and always get on with everyone. I very like my own company. And I like to just focus on projects. I mean, I've been brought up with the mentality of, you know, sometimes distractions are deadly. And sometimes when you've got certain company, you've got your friends that want to go out drinking and things, you know, it is a distraction. So for me personally, when I went to Dubai, I just kept myself grounded because I was opening up this business. We invested a lot of money in it and I just really kept myself grounded. I've came over here this year to Marbella, and after last year I actually done a bodybuilding competition, so my summer was like ruined. It was just a case of eat, train, like
it's hardcore, isn't it?
Yeah, like absolutely. So I've focused more on living like a more balanced life where I can go out, enjoy drinks with my friends, enjoy my life a little bit more, but still do my work as well. And that's a big part of why living in Marbella now feels really nice to me. It honestly feels like home now.
Do you feel like you've got that perfect balance between like work and enjoying life as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, this summer I've probably had the wrong type of balance because I'm too far the other way this summer, but I'm enjoying it and it's nice. And I think sometimes people need to, although you need to work hard in life and obviously look after your health and look after your body, there is elements where you need to just enjoy and let your hair down a little bit as well.
Yeah, and you're only young once. Like, you don't want to look back in like 20 years time and think, oh, I wish I just enjoyed my summer in Marbella where I was living.
Absolutely. And I've met some really, really nice, interesting people over here, and I just enjoy their company. I mean, I'll give you guys an example. Me and my girlfriend were meant to go on date night on Saturday night.
Right.
And we do this bike ride every Friday with our friends. It's like a 50-kilometre bike ride.
Oh, wow. Okay. What a date. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I know. So, no, this is on the Friday. So we always all go for lunch after that. So they kind of said to us, you know, Anton, what are you guys doing tomorrow? And my girlfriend was like, oh, I've arranged date night for us. We're just going to go out. And they were like, okay, we'll come. So we had to pick up the phone the restaurant and say, can we change the booking from 2 people to 13 people, please.
Oh, wow.
that's a big change. So we've got a good group of friends around us now, which is very nice.
And that's good. That's needed. But also, like, taking back to kind of Love Island, following that,
sure,
you must have been pulled in loads of different directions, go down this route for, like, you know, different opportunities coming. Did you know, even before going on, that fitness was always going to be the path, even if eventually...
Yeah, I mean, I don't have enough time to tell you guys about this story because that is a very long story, but Love Island actually very much came about because I was pursuing putting out an exercise DVD.
Oh, okay.
And long story short, when I contacted the management company to bring out an exercise DVD with, they were kind of like, look, we only deal with celebrities. So anyway, it all turned around and they were offered me the opportunity to, you know, audition for Love Island and go through that process.
Yeah.
So for me, that's how Love Island actually came about. So fitness always was
right.
The reason that it happened, you know. And it was never a case of me saying, oh, I need to go and get famous or I need to get this brand deal. My goal in life was always to hit as many people as possible and help them live a healthier, happier lifestyle. And now because of Love Island, I can do that on a much bigger scale than I ever could have imagined.
But did you feel like when you came out, there must have been opportunities that kind of maybe stirred you away, or were you kind of always just headset on?
Listen, absolutely. I mean, we had, I'm sure I got offered like £30,000 to do like a McDonald's ad, and I had to turn it down.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was like, do I have to turn this down? You know, I did, because it wasn't true to who I was, you know, and you can't be promoting a healthy lifestyle in one way and contradicting yourself in another way. But as well, with that being said, when I was doing the personal appearances, and those that don't know what that is, when you go to nightclubs and you have to take photos with people, I did 86 of these in 90 days. And you're just in and out of nightclubs. So you can imagine this very strict routine fitness guy that's used to his absolute routine, then just going from traveling to nightclubs to traveling to nightclubs. And that period was difficult to stay grounded because, to be honest, you start believing, you know, your own BS effectively. I know I can't swear, but so you basically start believing it. You start believing that you're super famous and, you know, everyone wants you. And it's just, it is a hard experience to overcome. But we got past it and then we just got focused right back on the fitness again.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You enjoyed the time. You milked it for what it's worth, I suppose. And kind of, then found your own path, which is great. But one of the reasons...
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons you said you kind of got into it is you had your own kind of transformation. I think I've seen you posted a picture and you're quite open about it as well. Do you feel like that's kind of resonated with a lot of your audience, that you've been open about your own transformation, fitness transformation?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that people just have this perception of someone that goes on Love Island and they think, well, it's okay for them that they look this way or they're confident or, you know, whatever it may be. And for me, it wasn't always like that. It was the complete opposite. I was the shy guy, you know, I was overweight, I got bullied. And I want people to understand that you can go through all this, but you can turn it around if you're willing to do so. And I wasn't just like it just happened. It took a lot of time. Even to this day, I still openly speak about that I struggle with my own body image. Mm. And some people think that I'm crazy and that I struggle with my body image. But the truth is, I genuinely do. And it's okay, because ultimately, we are open to so much these days with social media. We see the perfect body every day. We see, you know, superheroes on TV. We see these adverts. And we think that this is the norm. But the reality is, it's not. And we can't keep always looking for someone else's perfection. We need to just better ourselves every day. And that's a message I'm really constantly trying to get across.
And, like, what are some of the little things that, like, every day an average person who's just looking to make themselves a little bit healthier in terms of their lifestyle, like, what are some things people can just do every day?
Yeah, it's as simple as it sounds. It's just a case of, like, moving a little bit more and cutting out some bad habits. So when I get someone new that's coming to me as a client, I will never, ever just take you from where you are to the perfect solution here, because there's too much of a big jump. You need to make good healthy habits within to their current life that they can stick to, rather than trying to restrict them too much. And that's what works best with most people. So literally move more, cut out some rubbish within your diet, and you'll see a small difference in that in itself.
And I think a lot of people with that, you know, if I'm big chocolate, I like my chocolate, but you can have it in moderation, isn't it? Because some people just cut it out and go, no.
Well, this is the thing, and this is something I post a lot in my socials, okay? So one that I've done recently is, you've got a protein bar, you've got a chocolate bar, okay?
Yeah.
And people think this protein bar is, if you take that, it's like the most amazing thing you can do. If you eat a chocolate bar, it's the worst thing you can do. But ultimately, they've both just got the same amount of calories in them. That's the truth. Yes, one is more nutrient dense and protein, etc. But what if you having that chocolate bar stops you binging out later on and your next meal's healthy? That's a win. So the problem is, when you restrict someone and you tell someone they can't do it or they can't have it, they can only manage that for so long. And then eventually they are going to break and then they'll binge. So that's one thing I'm really focusing on now with people, is letting them understand that you can have a balanced life and a balanced diet as well.
And, like, speaking of travel, say you want to have a really healthy lifestyle, you've achieved that, but then you kind of have to pick up and move country for an opportunity or work. Like, how do you then maintain that same healthy lifestyle, but in a different country where you might not have people holding you accountable, or, you know, you're going out more because you want to make more friends? Like, have you felt any challenges in terms of that? And what would you say for someone in that position?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, especially over here, you know, I've been going out a lot more, and I've, like you said, I'm open about it. I've drank a lot more than I usually ever would as well. And it comes to a point where you're like, yeah, you can enjoy this, but you've got to realise that it's going to be a sacrifice because of that. Yeah. And with myself, I've probably even been over here, I think I've probably gained about 5, 6 kilos, 7 kilos, but I've been willing to accept that, because if you look at the grand scheme of things, like over a year period, let's say, if you have a little 3 months where you're just enjoying yourself, that's fine. But it's about not beating yourself up about it, because you can ultimately make the decision one day to then just change. But there is always ways and means of making better choices. If you're drinking alcohol, for example, rather than drinking wine, maybe just have a vodka Diet Coke, you know? It's just making small, simple changes. But at the same time, enjoy your life as well, because you have to.
And obviously, throughout the show, we have been speaking about you yourself with a big kind of social media profile. Social media sometimes glamorizes the idea of moving abroad with loads of influencers kind of upping sticks and going to Dubai or Miami. Do you, from your own experience, do you feel like that's true or false? Or what? Like, how can you, what would your take on that be?
Everything looks better on social media. of what you are. And, you know, I'll take the Love Island villa as a prime example for you.
Yeah.
You think that staying in this place for 9 weeks, you know, in the sun and just with loads of people around you is going to be an amazing experience. And it is. But after a few weeks, no matter where you are, you're going to get bored. You're going to get annoyed at the people you're around. It's just normal. So with Dubai in particular, Dubai was an amazing place, and I did see myself living there for the foreseeable. But then after a year and a half, I just really got sick of it. And there was a lot of things in Dubai that has just made so difficult. Setting up your business, if you want to speak to someone, it's like you need to go through all these calls. And, you know, there's challenges in every country that you live in. But the one thing I will say is you cannot run away from yourself, okay? So if you're unhappy in the UK, you're not going to be just happy.
Love that point. Yeah, I love that.
So, you know, that's one thing, and that's one thing I've learned, because one thing I'm probably not as open and honest about as I should be is I've went through a lot of my mental health difficulties over the last few years with my life changing so much, and it's been difficult. And maybe a lot of it, I was trying to run away from myself, and maybe I was trying to run away, but I never ever could, because then you're going to feel the same emotions no matter where you are.
Yeah, you can change the external environment all you want, but if you've not healed internally, then that's always going to be that. So true.
It's that saying, isn't it? Same thing, different country, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can say that. Everyone got what we're going about. But where's next for you? Like, can you see yourself jumping up sticks and going somewhere else? Or is it always going to be like Marbella for now and then back to the UK or Scotland? Or...
Yeah, what's really good about Marbella is when there's been work opportunities in the UK, which come up quite often, it's an easy enough flight from Marbella to the UK to do work, whereas Dubai's a little bit more complicated because of, obviously, the distance. So for me, it's a very good base for me at the minute. It was only ever meant to be a summer thing here, but as it stands, I can't see myself moving away anytime soon.
Wow, that's amazing.
I love the fact that you just go on holiday and then end up staying. It's happened with Dubai, it happened with...
Literally, and that's the thing. But, you know, even that year, I was so close to not doing it. It's like, you know, I've got a lot of work to focus on, and then I went over, and then it's opened up a new opportunity. And that's the way my life always has. It's just like, sometimes you don't know what's in front of you, but then as you take a step, then you can see it a little bit clearer, and I just keep taking these steps, and, you know, your life opens up in front of you.
Yeah, I feel like work comes and goes, but, like, if you're happy in yourself and you're giving out good energy, then it always comes back, no matter where you are in the world. So that's, like, a prime example of that.
I think you're a great advocate for fitness and for kind of just what you can do after you use a platform. I think that you've done a really good job on that. Like, what, with that in mind, what is next for you and the business and kind of, what's going on?
For me now, we're really focusing on rebranding the business. So all my business was before was focused on, it was called Antoned. So it was very much focused on toning and body transformation. But now I really want to take away the body image side of it. I want to people not to focus so much on changing their bodies. I know that that is what most people want, but if you can enjoy the process of getting there, then you will get there, but you need to enjoy the process of doing it. So I'm moving my business over to Balance by Anton, and I'm really focusing on creating a community where it's going to be affordable for them first and foremost, because again, we're going through a hard time in the world, and people don't have finances, and I never want money to be an issue for people when they're looking to get in shape. I don't want their time, their motivation. So I'm creating something that we're working on at the minute where it's accessible for everyone, and that's always been the goal, making fitness as accessible as possible for everyone.
It's exciting times, a lot going on then as well, so a lot to do.
Absolutely. Always.
Which is good. Look, thank you so much for joining us. I just want to, can you leave us with a top tip for kind of just moving abroad? Like one kind of short.
Just one short tip for moving abroad. Just go and try it. Why not?
Yeah, I like that.
What have you got to lose?
Facts. I'm going to get on a flight next
there
week.
There you go. Go to my bed. Meet Anton. Go on that bike ride.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Anton. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thanks. Oh, it was great having Anton on.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much more.
Yeah, I feel like we need
abroad.
A part two, but yeah, with him as well.
Yeah, just like in terms of like the mental aspect and all of that, like I hadn't really thought that far into it in terms of, you know, moving abroad. Yeah, it's all fun and games externally, but actually he's right, like it was not going to change something internally overnight.
And the fact that he was so open about that, which is really nice, like because that people do look up to him, he is an influencer in some respects.
Yeah, and so it's so important to have those vocalize. Honest conversations. Yeah, definitely. So that brings us on to Agony Aunts and Uncles.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
so
yes,
this
yes.
is the part of the program where we answer your questions about the topics that we have covered this week. And obviously this week is all things travel. So for our future topics, if you want to get in touch, you can email cultureclash@foobarradio.com or you can tweet us at Foobar Radio. And for this week, we have a couple of dilemmas that people have sent in. So Jamie has asked, I'm in my early 30s and I'm considering making the big move down under. A few of my friends have moved there and my girlfriend is super keen as she loves the lifestyle. Whilst the idea of living in Australia sounds incredible, I am scared to leave behind my family as they are the main support system. Should I take the plunge?
Yes. I'm always like straight to the point with these. Like 100%. Like if you got... Thing is, I think moving is all about like opportunity and, you know, there's a whole land of opportunity there. It's, you know, it and that English speaking country, and like obviously they might know some people there, or you know, it's just a good experience. Like, why not go for it? I understand your support system, but with everything being remote and you know, FaceTime and WhatsApp calling, and you know, you can Zoom, you
but,
can
still- but Australia's far, it's so whole 12 hours. Like, I'm
20,
you gonna,
24.
Oh, is it? 20, no, that's the same. 24 hours is the same.
No, 24 hours.
It'll be 12. I think it's 12.
No, it's 24
is
hours.
Is it? Yeah, it's 24 hours.
Yeah, so 12 hours to like to Bali, and then it's like, yeah, another.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, yeah, that's it's a far distance, yeah, basically. And it's a long time to go back and forth.
Yeah.
And are you going to be waking your parents up at like God knows what hours of the day to have a chat with them? Like, it's not as easy.
Listen,
right?
They will though. They will wake up to know you're safe.
Yeah, right? True. I just think like Australia is far. It's scary to move somewhere where you know, you can't just get on a flight back home in a few hours if you're that far away.
I think we understand like the concerns, like Jamie, your concerns and kind of doubts about it, but just weigh out the pros and cons. I think like, is there opportunities there for you for working? Do you have like a network there already there? Because sometimes, you know, family, you know, friends can be a family away from home, right?
That's true.
And you know, what is the kind of motive for going there? Like we just spoke to Anton. Is it just to escape something here, or is it because you see, like, you know, don't just kind of go off, oh, your friends are there or someone's going there and they're glamorising it. Actually really look into it, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. And also you don't need to hold yourself to, I'm going to move halfway across the world forever. Like, you can give yourself a little trial period maybe of like 6 months, which in the grand scheme of things isn't that long, and see if you really enjoy it. And yeah, if you do, then maybe give it another 1 year or 2 years and then see where you go from there. I feel like we don't need to have our whole lives figured out. So maybe, yeah, just do it for a short time. And I think Australia is a really good one to get like a 2-3 year visa.
Yeah.
So again, you don't need to feel like you're committed for a really long period of time.
And sometimes you do just need to take that risk or that plunge and just change the
life's
dynamic.
Too short.
Yeah, just sometimes you need like something bold and just, you know, like it depends on where you're at in your life. It obviously feels like the fact that you're considering it, that you want a change. And sometimes it's just good to just bite off the, what's the apron, cut off the apron strings, isn't it? And just go.
Is that another thing?
Oh, okay, right.
but yeah, I think, yeah, life's too short not to take risks. And if you don't try, you'll never know. You'll always think like, oh, what if I made that move? And especially while I feel as though maybe you don't have children or you're not married yet, like, again, it's probably better to try those things then than worrying about everyone else.
And the love life could be waiting there. You never know.
His girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
But you never know.
Yeah.
Okay, second dilemma. Isabella, okay? Right. Isabella asks, I'm Brazilian, but moved to the UK for university around 10 years ago and never left. My mum has recently been quite ill and my dad has asked for me to move back home in order to look after her. As much as I love my parents, I love my life in the UK and I can't imagine moving back to Brazil. How do you advise I handle this situation?
That's a really tough one. Yeah, because it's your family is your family.
Your mum's ill.
Yeah.
The mother who gave birth to you is now ill and in need of you. I feel like that's a tough dilemma.
I think like in our culture, we grow up and like it's like our parents look after us up to a certain way. And then even now...
It flips,
yeah,
right?
It flips. Like even now I'm 33 and I live at home with parents. I can see myself taking on that role more and more. Just little stuff like with, you know, bills and transactions, and you can't get doctor's appointments now, so it's like going online doing this and doing that, and it's like little stuff like that. So if one of them become ill, I would definitely have to step up because it's just in us. And I get it. It's a tough decision because you want to be independent and it's hard to figure out your own life. Like sometimes you haven't got it all set, you know, by the time you're a certain age, and you know you're still figuring yourself out, you're still, you know, got you trying to find your perfect setup. So it is a dilemma, but I just feel like health, when it comes to health...
And it's your parent, it's your mum. Like, I feel like, for me personally, I would massively regret if I wasn't there for my parents when they needed me at a time that they were unwell. But at the same time, I feel like my mum wouldn't want me to give up on my dreams and my life that I've made for myself because of her. So I feel like it's finding a balance. Well, maybe you don't move back entirely and you visit frequently, or you just go back for a certain period, but you know you're going to go back to the UK and pick up that lifestyle. I feel like it's your parents.
Yeah,
I could not leave my mum unwell.
No, nor can I. But like, I get it. You've got to think about both sides. And I think it's about setting boundaries, Isabella.
Yes.
I think it is like, okay, you're going back, but you let them know I'm going to go back. Yeah, okay, this is what, but my main aim is to, you know, reside home here, and I'm going to come back for a short time period, figure stuff out. Or it's kind of setting up support systems there, going back, setting up support systems so your mum is looked after, and you know,
and that will give you a level of comfort and reassurance as well,
exactly,
that you've kind of done the right thing and she's in the best possible place with the best care.
And sometimes like being here, you can actually financially support like being there.
True.
You know, if that's a factor as well.
True.
You can, and like we said, there's zooms, you know, making sure you're regularly in contact. There's ways around it, but me personally, I'll be on the plane.
Yeah, and I would too, but I also think you shouldn't feel guilty if you can't or you're unable to for certain reasons.
Yeah.
Because again, like, I think as immigrants, like when you move to a different country, you feel guilty for doing anything that like it has a negative impact on your parents or where you're originally from, but it is also your life and you've created this freedom and a successful career where you should be able to enjoy it too. So yeah, I think you're right, find a balance that works, set the boundaries, and like there's so many options, you don't have to just go there and never come back.
Yeah, and you know what, and just figure out what opportunities are there in Brazil. Like, do you know what I mean? There might be like similar opportunities or a similar network you could build there, like just because you've
had... That's so true. I feel like when you leave a country, you almost think, okay, I'm never going back there, like that chapter's closed, I've built a new life elsewhere. But like, who's to say that you can't do what you're doing in the UK, in Brazil, and be 10 times more successful? Like, you never know, right?
Well, it's taking what you learned here, right? And taking everything you've kind of experienced and going back there and just kind of going, right, owning it and going, right, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it.
That's so true. I've never thought of that before. So I think, yeah, keep your options open and don't ever close that door completely.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of people that my cousins are coming from India. They've set up, they've gone to university here, they've got experience here, then they've gone back and they haven't gone back to Punjab where we're from, which is north of India. They've gone back to the, you know, Delhi and Mumbai and really carved out a career for themselves because they're like, they're taking what they learned here and bringing it back there.
And also I feel like there's this whole perception of the UK is like the dreamland.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's for like a lot of Indians, I guess it was like the British Empire.
Yeah.
They just like, I guess, romanticize the idea of living in the UK. But actually now with the world developing in so many different countries and globalization and all of these things, there's opportunities in lots of different countries in the world, not just those that were like prevalent at like society back in the day. So again, like, and you can achieve what you want in many different other parts of the world. You don't feel like you have to come to certain countries that have been the epitome of the economy for years.
No, 100%. Now, obviously, going through all the show, Tanvi, what is your kind of like consensus now on living abroad and where are you at?
I think I'm so much more open-minded to it, because whilst it's so scary, I think having spoken to people that have done it and they've honestly like sold the dream to the benefits of living somewhere else and how that can impact your health, your mental health, your physical health, I just think if you're able to do it at least once in your life, and it doesn't need to be forever, but maybe you should just try it. And what is the worst that can happen? Like, your friends, your family, your base is always going to be there. But yeah, it's made me so much more open-minded to try it.
Yeah.
What about you?
100% open-minded to trying it. Just experiencing it. Like, even that month traveling I went, it kind of gave me a taste for it. Even holidays, right? They give you a little taste for it. And it's...
Yeah, and just being around new people, new environments. I feel like as creatives, it's inspirational to kind of change up the scenery once in a while and just give you that boost of energy that sometimes you can lack if you stay in the same place for too long.
100%. Look, it's been a great show. It's lovely having Anton on and Tyrone. I feel like we've learned a lot. So thank you for everyone. Thank you to you, Tanvi.
And you, Juggy. It's been like just a wholesome chat today.
It has, it has. Look, we've got plenty more coming up on the series, so stay tuned with us. And if you have any questions for our Agni, Aunt and Uncle segment, you can email us at cultureclash@foodbar.com.